Nick?
Hey.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. Jumping from one call to another?
Well, I had a little break. I worked on two chapters of my book, which is, you know, I do it whenever I can, and I had my assistant Cindy come over, and we've been working on it. You spend about 2 hours a day writing is what you end up with.
Nice.
It's hard work, but it's very gratifying. Really get some good stories going on and good examples. So you're always doing research, you're always reading, but you're you're using this as your lab to try and create more testimonials and, you know, statistical but more anecdotal evidence that things work. So one thing today happened. There's a team up in which you might consider calling and doing a conference call with them. It's a wonderful team, Morgan Stanley. it's called, I guess you've got a group. I know Craig Dobbs was part of the group called the Greystone Group, but these guys, it's Mike Beers at Morgan Stanley. And he really has used centers of influence very effectively. And it turns out, just like, you know, many of these top producers have one center of influence that turns out to be very instrumental in their success. And most teams that I work with do not have that kind of relationship. And they just kind of don't believe it exists, you know.
Uh-huh.
Until you have one, you don't believe it exists.
Yeah.
So you might consider, you know, I could make the arrangements to even do a conference call on this line with Mike if you'd like. To just have him give a testimonial on centers of influence and how well they work. Sometimes that's more important than anything I can ever say. And it's one thing to read about it, but when you hear it out loud, he was kind of going wild over the program. I mean, just how well it's worked to close business at an accelerated rate. You know, they're a very successful team, but using Supernova, he just said it's unbelievable how much it's helped them close business, big business, $10 million accounts, things like
mm-hmm.
that, where just that, you know, that the process is so important to those kinds of clients that he just thinks that it's very powerful. So I just heard him this morning, and I was on with another team that's really kind of struggling. One of Tim Burns' teams up in Boca Raton is kind of struggling with the whole concept. So I thought that might be a good thing to do. So that's offers on the table if you'd like it.
Okay.
Actually like to record him telling you about it because I think it would give – it would be a pretty good, I think it would be a pretty good session.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, I never know exactly what they're going to say, but those are always wonderful opportunities. Anyway, how did you do on our project? It's kind of a big project.
So it's not an easy task, let me tell you.
I know. That's why so few people do it. You know, it's hard.
I But I did spend a lot of time researching, thinking about it, actually putting some ideas down. We have a meeting today with my team because one of my service managers was out last week. So we have a meeting today at 4:30. I gave them all a list of values so they could come to the meeting with their top five values. So we're going to go through the exercise this afternoon and start to craft it. Now, I had a question about it, and it's, when we try to define the purpose, mission, and vision, is that for the office or is that for us as a team to our face?
It's really something, you know, I did it for me, but that my mind for me personally became what was for the office in the district. So I did not create one for the office. It was for me, but I thought that it was also ours because I felt it was so strong that it represented everything that we believed in as a group. Okay, so we came to the conclusion of, for those two things were built out of a team exercise like yours, and it was for the district at the time, but of course, I personally adopted it then as mine.
Mm. Because I wonder, I mean, obviously there is some similarities between what our mission to our employees and particularly FAs is vis-a-vis what the FAs mission or the office mission with our clients is. So there's going to be some similarities, but I'm not sure it's exactly the same. So that's when I started to question myself.
Yeah. I think it was more, ours was really more for us and our district and our office for ourselves. You know, it had less to do with the clients than our own personal development.
Okay.
That's the way I saw it. And it became very powerful for us. If we live that, you know, the boldly go and no person's gone before and joyfully share the map, that became our mantra. And it was important for us because we were just at that stage, you know, very mature stage of my career where I was looking for something that was more important than money and more important than, you know, my own career. It was all about my higher purpose and our office's higher purpose.
Okay.
So, it was different than maybe I would have written when I was young and whatever. It was fun, and I think that's part of the game is that if you can make something that's fun for people, they'll remember it. But maybe a little radical in the sense of, you know, that's kind of crazy, Rob. It was just, you know, it was good for me.
Great. So we are doing that today, but it allowed me to think a lot. The other thing I did is I share that exercise that I am doing. I suggested all the teams that either you or Rob Schaefer has coached to also offer them to do that exercise. So I'll be following up with them on them creating their own vision, mission, and purpose. As we spoke last week, what I did was I have to tell you, I'm pretty thrilled about it. Is I really organized my day. So I created a perfect day, the exercise of your current day versus your perfect day, and I segmented time, particularly on four key items that I want to make sure I'm doing consistently every day. And, of course, one is spending an hour in Supernova, and the other one is at least half an hour on recruiting, follow-up, and planning, etc. every day. That's in the morning. And then the admin and compliance and walk around the office another hour in the afternoons. And I organize all my FA meetings and coaching meetings also in the afternoon. So it's amazing. I mean, it's incredible. So I'm reorganizing all my schedule based on that, and making my day much more focused, productive, less waste of time, less distractions. I'm sure my assistant, she couldn't believe it. So,
well, tell me why it's so dramatic. I mean, it sounds like it's been a revelation, kind of.
Well, yeah, it is, because, you know, at 10 o'clock, at 9:30, I start sharp on Supernova, and rather than just, if there's something that's coming up, I just put it down on a notebook and leave it for later. I'm restructuring meetings, so before an FA would want to meet, I would meet him at any moment, right? Now I'm putting it between 3 and 4, right? And compliance things, they come up, yeah, let's discuss it, let's address it. Say, no, let's talk at 2. That's my slot for compliance. So it's helping my day be much more organized, and I'm much more focused, and I'm spending time of the things that I want to spend every day, right? So it's not that when I find time, I'll spend time on recruiting. I'll making sure I have my at least half an hour time of recruiting every day. So it's like putting the rocks before and then the sun and then the water on the jar, right? Rather than putting the water first and the sun and then there's no space for the rocks. So it's just keeps you organized, keeps me organized and keeps me focused. And I think it's going to keep everyone around me little by little also organized and focused and organized, sort of, particularly. So
it's really good.
As you say, it's getting me organized and help me stay organized.
It's a game.
Yeah. So, so again, that's helping me. And I turn off the email, right? So when I'm in my Supernova hour or recruiting slot or whatever it is, when I'm doing something, I have my email checked, closed, not checking emails, not so. So you, yeah, just leave distractions away.
It's really, I think this is going to be so helpful coaching.
Why do you say that?
Well, when we do it and we realize how much it's helping us,
mm-hmm.
we're very much more effective in telling somebody, look, I'm not just telling you to do this. I'm doing it and it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My idea is, yeah. So I was actually thinking, well, I'm going to do it tomorrow in my FA meeting. But yeah, absolutely. You can share it with conviction.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So what else did you find from the exercise so far in terms of purpose, mission, vision? Values and all that. Any other kind of the same revelations that you had some revelations here on the calendar, creating your ideal day. Any revelations so far on the process of purpose, mission, vision?
No, I'll be honest, not revelations, because as I said, I think I've been thinking of doing this, but I haven't put it in writing. So it's more of the exercise of actually crafting it and putting it down. Yeah, I mean, some ideas, leading by example. Obviously what I want to do is unleash people's potential and also raise the bar of the industry as a whole, right? This is something that I strongly believe is there's a huge opportunity for the industry to be much better than what it is today. So thinking of my vision is a place or an office where everyone is doing everything by putting the client's interest first rather than their pocket, right? And I think we are so far away from that, but that's kind of my guiding principle. Being that first person that your clients call you with any concern that they have, financial or wealth related.
Right. It's really important. I've been spending quite a bit of time on this mastermind group, and what I find is the people that engage in this, it's a transformational experience for them. Because human beings have they're pleasure seekers. They avoid conflict. That means in every area of their life. So they tend to not develop very deep relationships. They hide their feelings. They try and problem solve themselves. They don't reach out. So we're kind of pathetic. The mastermind group done right sort of deals with all those issues. It gives you permission to be vulnerable, to open up, to share, to ask for help, to give help. It has sort of this secret message that, you know, you do it, people enter into these things in order to do more business, and they end up finding it's probably one of the more meaningful parts of their lives. So I think it can be, as a human coach, one human being to another, to help people find meaning in their lives and make their lives more, make their lives better.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the mental health of the average financial advisor who is in a very lonely job, even if they're on a team, it's a lonely job.
Yes.
This gives them permission to not be alone and to share things with people that they probably wouldn't even share with their teammates. So it's, and women in particular are drawn to this sort of thing, find tremendous amount of benefit in it. Men should, but don't as much. The men I know that have done this rave about it. Not from the point of view of business, but from the point of view of their personal lives and how much it's meant to them. So you hear about people feeling as though it actually saved their life when they got sick because of the network was able to get them to the right kind of person and help. This comes up more and more. And by the way, the people that are engaged in these are enormously successful.
So what is that mastermind group that you had? I think I told you, right? So The other thing that I did is I'm going to have, we schedule our first monthly lunch with my Supernova FAs. So I want them to get together, kind of a mastermind group in the office. So what is the mastermind group that you're doing, and what's, who are part of those?
You had Bill Cates come in, but I interviewed Bill Cates the other day on mastermind groups, and he's in three different ones. And again, it was the same story. They were really important in his life. He's had one for 25 years, 30 years. I unfortunately never did this. Still haven't. But I should have. Had I been like you at your stage in your community and I had started a mastermind group, I ended up spending, 30 years in Indianapolis working. So almost 30 years, like 28 years or something. Had I done that at the beginning, I would have spent 30 years building friendships with really important people that could have helped me engage in the community and solve all the problems that I had as a manager, because they were, the people that I would have engaged in initially were all the up-and-comers in the community. I was on the cover of our local IBJ, Indianapolis Business Journal, which would be probably your Miami Business Journal. And, the guys that were on the cover were the young up-and-comers in the community when I first came to Indianapolis. Had I formed a mastermind group with just that group, could have helped me enormously in terms of building the business in the community. But I didn't do that. You know, nobody. But mastermind groups have been around since the time of Thomas Edison, you know, and before that even, you know, 100 years. And if these guys are smart enough to do it, then we should be, right? Not to jump around on topics, but, I mean, this is just what I was writing, was what I was writing the chapter on, mastermind groups, and it just hit me how sincerely these people that I interviewed talk about this stuff. But anyway,
and
what a mastermind group is a group, it's the idea that when two people come together, they form a third mind, a mastermind. It's like, you know, when you and I start talking, our ideas, your idea, my idea, we then, I call it stair-stepping. You know, I come up with an idea, you listen, you make it better, then I make it better, and so forth. We create a third mind.
Hmm.
When you have five or six people all giving people with curious, eager, learning, you know, good minds, they problem solve like crazy. So at each meeting that you come together, you have one good idea, one problem. So you give an idea, you put a problem on the table, and you also, you know, share your successes in the past. Each person builds a business plan for the group that they are then accountable to for their business. So you might have in your group a prominent partner in a CPA firm, a prominent lawyer, a prominent commercial realtor, a business broker, and you get to get, but you want them to be people you trust, you like, and are givers, not takers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will have you, I'll send you a copy of the chapter on mastermind groups. I think it'll be helpful to you. It's not for everybody because some people are just too impatient for it. But if you can sustain it and you need to run it, somebody needs to run it. But I think it really is something. You talk about deferred gratification, something that would be really important to do, but you never feel like you have time for it. That's one of those things. It's like writing a book. Nobody has time. Everybody would like to write a book. Nobody has time for it. Nobody ends up doing it. But at the end of the day, when you're 91 years old sitting around, what did you accomplish in your life? That book is going to be a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, this mastermind group, you put people from different, I mean, obviously you're going to network a lot, get involved in the community, but what is the purpose of the group itself? With that, because it's just personal development, professional development.
Well, it ends up, the person, you start out with the purpose of everybody helping each other do more business. But it ends up being, you develop amazing friendships, you have got more meaning to your life because of these friendships. You problem solve, you help each other. You reduce your stress because you're sharing with somebody else. You got to have a group that is confidential. You know, you can't, you're putting things on the table that you wouldn't share with anybody else or very few people. My friend Ken Shapiro says the purpose of his mastermind group is to make each other smarter.
Is to make each other what?
Smarter.
Smarter, okay.
you know, we never feel like we're smart enough, right? None of us. But the when you get five smart people in a room solving a problem, you get pretty smart. I think it would help tremendously in everything that you're trying to accomplish. Think about the recruiting, networking, bringing in huge accounts. I mean, you got to build it the right way with the right people, but this is a good long-term goal for you in that community.
Yeah.
Bill Cates is a member of three different ones. One of them, two of them he meets twice a year because he, like he's at this Speakers Bureau for $1 million, and each time when they go to these things, they meet for half a day together.
Mm-hmm.
One of them he meets for a whole day. The other one he meets quarterly. But I think you can meet monthly or every other month.
Okay, this is an interesting proposition. Yeah.
And I'd like you to do it for the same reason that I suggest managers do their estate planning so they can sell it.
Definitely.
If you own it, you can sell it, right?
Yes.
So I set up a family foundation and a charitable remainder trust, charitable lead trust. I did all the estate planning for myself, even though I was young. I did it at 50. I thought, this is way too early to be doing this. But in reality, it was perfect time for everything. But then
okay.
I could stand up in front of an audience of people that were, you know, had just inherited money or had money or something and needed to do estate planning, and I could talk about it and say, this is what I did.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that has a completely different impact, of course.
Right.
When you walk the talk.
Right. So, anyway, so
okay.
You tried creating the perfect day. That's good. I've got so much
yeah.
to talk about. What questions are coming up in your mind?
The one thing that came up on my mind is when creating exceptional service and committing to making the commitment to exceptional service, I always have had this issue about what do clients think? Surveying clients. And how, I wonder whether you ever done it, you've seen it done, what your thoughts are on having a client survey that can help you understand the client better, what their expectations are, what are the things that they want us to address with them and we are not doing. So it's not really on the servicing, just on the servicing side of things, administrative things, but more on the broader issues that we are not discussing with them.
Well, one of the things you can do, I mean, this is, you're like a, at this stage, you're a representative from your state to your Congress, okay? When you get, you know, to be a district or regional director or market leader, you become kind of a senator. So you have an agenda that you want to create for that job, for the national level, okay? And one of the things you can do is to create this vision. If you were president of the firm and could control things,
mm-hmm.
what would you do? So it's kind of like if you wanted to pass a bill through your organization, what would the bill look like? So to me, I always had an agenda. I didn't. When I became a mature adult at, 50, I started to see this, that I had an ability to influence the firm, and so I would have an agenda. But here's what I would recommend your agenda be. That the firm be completely client-centered, like no firm is. That they do spend the money to survey your clients with a half a million and above. Okay? That you create an incentive for the FAs to deliver a great client experience. And to me, that incentive would incorporate something called an easy pass. And the easy pass is, as opposed to speed bump management, which is you can't do anything, the computer is constantly harassing me as an FA, like driving down the road and having constantly hitting speed bumps. That's the way we treat our FAs today in every firm. My suggestion is if somebody is certified Supernova, that they get an easy pass. That doesn't mean we don't check on them.
Mm-hmm.
But it means we don't harass them anymore.
Yeah, I don't have that problem, At least in my branch, I don't.
Well, you're blessed because I'm hearing it, particularly at Merrill Lynch, the guys are going crazy.
Well, yeah, Merrill Lynch is completely different. Yeah. Here we don't have that issue. I'm not seeing it. In my branch, and I think that Morgan Stanley doesn't have that problem. Like Wells Fargo or Merrill Lynch too. And maybe UBS does too.
Do you think it's because you guys just have a different attitude? Your compliance hasn't completely taken over the firm or what?
Yes, absolutely. So it is that our compliance has not taken over the firm. Now, you may ask me why, right? Why is that? And that's, I don't know the answer, but clearly Bank of America, Wells Fargo have a bank mentality, and I think it's very different. Morgan Stanley has been created as an investment bank capital market firm where their business is a business of managing risk, it's not avoiding risk. Where in banks, I think the mentality is much more towards avoiding risk or diminishing risk. Also, the business
I would suggest that this is a huge opportunity for recruiting them, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Believe me, that's...
I'm not in the business of moving, or even raising this topic, but I'm telling you, what I hear is just sad, and that just pisses me off.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I have friends at Merrill Lynch. I have friends at UBS, and I'm very good friends with the manager at Wells Fargo. So we talk all the time about this. And, that's keeping them very unhappy. So I'm trying to leverage, and I have people that I recruited from all those firms. So I'm trying to leverage those people, too, to talk to their colleagues.
So I throw that out there. So, you take that one off the table. The surveys then are just to get better and better. And I encourage you to go to Gorman because at Merrill, they always surveyed their clients.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only firm that's doing that today in the market. And they didn't stop when costs rose, when costs were a big problem, they kept doing it. The boat, the old BOSAR, maybe they changed the name or something, but I know they're still surveying clients.
Hmm.
So I encourage you that as part of your legislation to encourage that. You can do it on a local level,
mm-hmm.
but I think you may look amateurish. I'd rather see you encourage the firm to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, that's one thing. Listen, I mean, talking about purpose and finding meaning, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, one of the things that they do, they defined positive psychology is allowing yourself to be human, right? So I think that's something that we need to all learn a little bit more, allowing ourselves to be human, going to the mastermind and being vulnerable. But I think this industry is one of the industries that have the best jobs, the most meaningful jobs, if you understand it right, if you get it right as an FA or even as a manager. I mean, what we are doing for clients is so important to clients that I think that the purpose and the meaning is just there. It's in front of us. But for whatever reason, it's we haven't highlighted that enough. I mean, we don't put that in the front. So the other side of the coin is the money and how much money could be made, and that's what makes people react in a different way and be enlightened by the money instead of the purpose of the job. But I think that the purpose and meaning, it's easy. It's easy in this industry if we position it right. So I don't know why there is such a huge divergence between what we see and what we should be seeing, right? Or the difference you see in an FA that really enjoys what they do because they are helping the clients vis-a-vis an FA that only cares about swapping a trade to make a commission.
I will tell you something. If you can get FAs to do 12-4-2, it changes their life. It changes the way they think about their job.
Well, that's what we're doing, my friend.
No, but I mean it. It's I keep hearing. You know, I keep hearing them say that. It's been amazing, Rob. You know, my depth of my relationship is so different. The conversations is so different. So I think the problem has been this, you know, that we haven't guided FAs from this transactional world that we lived in forever to this new world of consulting and helping. We just haven't really taught them how to make that transition.
Well, because the incentives are not there, right? So, I mean, you have to fight against the natural monetary incentives. The compensation is tied to revenue. So how do you change someone's mind when you're paying them every month based on how much they produce? So,
no, that's right. So if you could get them, the firm, you know, to pay people based on customer satisfaction, it would be much easier to do Supernova.
Yes. But I think you can achieve both. I think you can achieve both. I mean, look at this guy, right? Look at this guy. I mean, all the guys that you coach, right? They find the meaning in what they do. They have better relationship with their clients. They have a more organized life, more productive, and on top of that, they are making more money. So, I mean, we just need to break that circle, that vicious circle.
Yeah, we just have to be persistent and consistent and never give up. You know, just keep pounding it. And you're getting, I think you're getting towards the tipping point where people are, you know, you said to me, how are we going to do this? You know, how can we do this? You know, move the office. I said, you do it one team at a time. Just, you know, you just have to keep pounding on it. And eventually you get that tipping point where you get some of your best teams as raving fans, and then they just talk, and then you don't have to sell anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the others just fall in line. Like, oh, Mikey did it. Mikey likes it, then I'll do it.
Yeah.
And so you don't. It isn't as overwhelming a job as it looks like in the beginning. It becomes a null.
What else do I need to do?
Okay. One of the things to do is to make a list of your top FAs and match it up with your top CAs.
Yeah.
And see who's out of line.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to do anything about it right away. You just shine a light on it.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
And do that exercise for your whole team to see.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you want to encourage your best FAs to have your best CSAs. So when given the opportunity, you realign.
Okay.
Okay, it's an awareness thing. So, the first chapter is segmentation, creating a value model, vision for the future, and a commitment to excellence. The question is, are we committed, really committed to excellence, or are we accepting mediocrity at some level? So it's a combination of project upgrade and realignment.
Okay.
So my service manager came to me and said, Rob, I think you're accepting the best candidate available, not the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what do you mean, Kelly? She said, I think you're accepting mediocrity. I think that you're picking from the six people that we've been given to interview for this admin position, administrative for the district, not picking the right person. I said, wow, Kelly, that's impressive that you have the courage mm-hmm. to tell me, plus the vision to really understand how committed we are to that vision. And so I stopped what I was doing and went after the right candidate and got him.
Yeah.
That's when you say my vision and my commitment to excellence, my mission statement is being heard by the whole team when they call you on it. Because we're all, we all get busy and we all don't want to do certain jobs, right? Like hiring a new admin manager. But it's the most important thing you can ever do. And I made some mistakes in hiring. Not many, but enough that I learned some critical lessons. One of the lessons was this. Never go with just an interview. Because managers, admin managers, service managers, FAs, they're all brilliant at interviewing. And they omit. They don't lie necessarily, but they omit. Okay? So one of the things I learned was that you have people that have access to people that work for them make phone calls. And say,
yeah.
What's he really like? What's she really like?
Yeah.
And that would that would have stayed. It's particularly important when you're hiring managers.
I agree.
I had my admin call the admin in that office and the service manager call the service manager in that office and then get back to me. I didn't call them. They called them. And then they'd tell me what the person was really like. This is important in recruiting. Without anybody... You can't break confidentiality, but you got to find out what the person's really like.
Yes. We spoke a lot about that with my boss. How sometimes the pressure to recruit makes you bring not the ideal candidate. So I think that's, again, another place where the incentives, unfortunately, sometimes force you to or makes you make decisions that are not the best ones to protect the culture that you want to protect.
Right. So much better to not do that, to not take that person. Make it, even though it's harder on you, you won't pollute the culture. Because when you recruit somebody, you're saying, this is the ideal person for this office.
Yes. You need to have all of that very, very clear stated in order to stay true to it and honest
right.
to it, to that commitment.
Right. Yeah. So it isn't just project upgrade, but it's project keep the culture.
Yeah. Well, that's number one.
Yeah,
you always need to protect the culture. You need to protect the culture at any cost.
Right.
If you have a good one.
I used to bring the guy over or gal over for dinner when I was recruiting him at my house. And one time the guy was so mean to his wife. I couldn't believe it. He was so nice and such a good guy. It seemed like a perfect fit. I got him over for dinner, and he was just mean to his wife. I thought, is this guy a complete fool? Why would he do that in front of me and my wife? And, I mean, I was like, oh, my God, am I glad I did that.
Obviously, you never recruited him, right?
I did not recruit him. Of course not. I stopped that night, did it. It was done. It was kind of like the last thing, right? Before I brought him in, was to have dinner and kind of celebrate him coming over and all that. All my work, up in smoke. But it saved me, because the guy was a jerk.
Yeah. It's hard to get to know people when you're recruiting a couple of interviews and meetings, and it's difficult to say the character of the guy.
Isn't it? I mean, it's amazing.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned this. I was having a conversation with one of my producing managers on Friday about this issue of misalignment with one of his top FAs and her support staff. So I recall what I've seen in your video. So we're going to work on that too.
It's good.
Yeah.
Chapter 2 is building your foundation segmenting project pushdown, and it really is, you know, part of this realignment sort of thing with your so when you're looking at your day, which is what you just did, you said these are the priorities, these are not, okay? And so, therefore, I'm going to push down to somebody else that's qualified to do those things. Or I'm not going to do them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the question becomes, you can have your assistant be kind of scanning your emails for anything that would be an emergency. Meanwhile, you're not looking at them at all. You got your admin team taking care of compliance and operational issues all the time instead of you dealing with it. So what I would do, when somebody would bring me an operational issue, I never said no. What I did was I'd listen, and then I'd call my ops manager in and have him explain it again to the ops manager, and I'd hand it to the ops manager. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I made it clear that this was who it was supposed to go to without saying go to the admin manager.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would take them and walk them over to the admin manager's office and have them explain it to him there.
Okay.
So I made it clear to both the parties that this was not my job, but like being a good person at a retail store, I went and took them to where they needed to go.
Okay.
I didn't just say go see them.
That makes sense.
The other thing I did, which I learned, how many times did I do it wrong? I never made a deal in the boardroom in the beginning, what I would try and do is make everybody happy, right? So you make deals,
yeah.
And somebody says something, you say, okay, I'll do this and do that. I never did that. I would say, if they wanted to make a deal, or if they were, you know, whatever, I would bring them back to my office and call my secretary in, and she would write it out. Whatever it is that we were going to do.
What do you mean by making a deal? What do you mean by making a deal?
Well, people want things, right?
Okay.
You know, I want some advertising, or I want this,
yep.
Or I want that, or I want this, right? And you go, okay, if you do that, then, you know, I'll give you the money to do that, but you got to, you know, da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you probably can't do much of that these days, but there's always some of it that goes on.
Yes, absolutely.
And so the question is, what did you say? And what would happen to me was I wouldn't write it down.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy would come back to me and say, hey, this is what you agreed to. And I'd be like, no, that's not what I agreed to. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, you did. I'd be like, oh, God, you know.
They knew you well.
Right. Oh, they sucked me in. So it's the I say, you say thing, you know. So I avoided that by bringing them back to the office, sit down with my secretary, write it out, sign it, and then we had a deal. And there was no
uh-huh.
That was just
yeah.
I was always a pleaser, right? I wanted to please everybody.
Yes,
everybody
me too. Yeah. Why
yeah,
do
you're
do that? Why?
And we get sucked in, and then the takers just, we're givers, right? So
yeah.
We give everything. And the takers just work us. And so you gotta get it right, man.
Yeah.
And it also keeps you from doing things because you go, no, this isn't going to look good in writing. The other thing I learned was that you treat everybody well. I used to say fair but not equal. Okay? Fair
yeah.
But not equal. They can't be equal to everybody. Some people produce more. They deserve more. They get more.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be always fair, but it's never going to be equal. You know, it's not a democracy. It's not a. And so the other thing was in that line, some people want a bigger office, not because they need a bigger office, but because somebody else has a bigger office. But they don't really need a bigger office. What they need is more assistant help. You know, that's what they really need. What do you want versus what you need? And I used to focus on what they really needed to help them rather than what their ego said they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Or wanted. All right?
That's interesting, yeah.
So somebody might need some advertising money. Another one would need a little more sales assistant help. The other one really wanted a bigger office. So I could give the one guy a bigger office, he'd be happy as a clam. The other guy, I gave him more sales assistant help, he's happy as a clam. The other guy really wanted advertising money, I'd get him some advertising money. So it's really satisfying what they really wanted and needed, what they really needed versus what they wanted. That's another weird little thing that I learned.
Yeah, the question is when some, I mean, that's, is what they need, what they want, what they need from whom, whose perspective, because the first thing you need to do is align the perspectives, right, and the goals, because
right.
That's it. Someone is, they just don't want to grow, they are comfortable, they just want a bigger office. Well, I don't want to give you just a bigger office for you to feel good, I want you to grow. So the first thing is, where do we stand? We need to be on the same, we need to have the same goals, right? Align the goals. Otherwise, yeah.
I used to explain it to them this way. Look, you understand portfolio management. You're going to have some growth stocks. You're going to have some value stocks. You're going to have some income stocks. There's some FAs in here that are utilities. They're good guys. They do a lot of business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They produce a nice dividend. They're never going to grow, but they have value. But another guy's growing at 40% a year. I mean, which PE is, you know, what's the PE of the guy that's the utility and the guy that's growing at 40% a year. So where are you going to invest your money as a stockholder? You know, you're going to diversify up, or you're going to, you know, you're just the guy with 40 times, you know, growing at 40%, it's going to have a PE of 40. That means people are willing to pay more for that. They're willing to invest more.
Right, right, right.
In that company. So if you want more, you've got to grow and increase your PE.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're portfolio managers. You understand value, right? You understand where people put their money. So, in week two, define your ideal FA and CSA. Apply segment and concept to project upgrade, meaning, you know, people used to say to me, Rob, it's like an airplane. You know, it's an empty seat. Fill it. And I said, no, that's called accepting mediocrity. I said, I will not accept mediocrity at any level in my organization. I'd rather have five empty desks than I would have five bums.
That's a strong message. That's a very strong message.
The good guys
to the rest of the constituents.
You know, Gary Player, they asked him why he was such a good putter. And he said, I only go to lunch with good putters. It's a message. The best FAs, I mean, if you ask them, how would you like to be in an office with minimum $1 million producers where everybody was a go-getter, everybody was a go-giver, everybody was enthusiastic about helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of an office would that be like? My goal, frankly, was to have no fourth or fifth quintilers and everybody $1 million producer.
Yeah, that's a great goal to have.
All right, I think we ran into our time.
Okay, well, I'll work on that segmentation and I'll let you know how the exercise goes.
Excellent, excellent. Nick,
hopefully
thanks.
We'll get something for next Monday.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, Rob, thank you.
Thank you a million. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.